we're kitty corner to a high school, and then down the street from the high school are middle school kids, and it's just a constant parade of kids every single day. And you can like watch them from our kitchen window, or you can really see them from any window in our house. And it was homecoming weekend this weekend, and we just watched the kids from
Hamburg High, or is it another?
Yeah, it's Hamburg. So from Hamburg, whether it's the middle school kids or the high school kids, these kids are so adorably geeky. Even the cool kids are geeky, you know, and it's just funny to watch them. And my wife and I just laugh, and we're just like, God, were we this geeky? Because we, you know, we thought we were cool in high school. We had to be geeky. These kids are, they're just an awkward mess. And I say that in an endearing way, not like a critical way, but it's just, they're just funny.
And you, but you, to your point you made just before, you cringe because you go right to, I looked like that, didn't I? And I was so not aware of it.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. These kids, man, these kids are so awkward. But, yeah, I mean, it's homecoming weekend. There was a parade, which there's so, it's so funny. When I bought this house, I knew that I was buying across from the street from the high school.
Yeah.
I did not know what that, I had no idea what that was going to be like.
I was going to ask you that, but sometimes it's better not to. Yeah. You didn't really know what you were signing up for.
Nah, this school is the busiest school on the planet all day, all night. Plus I'm in a high traffic commuter village area to begin with. It's chaos. So there's some mornings I can't get out of my driveway because like,
did you make that purchase because house for the money? Like what was like the driving, or should I not ask that question?
The house is gorgeous.
I mean, I've seen pictures of it.
It's gorgeous. My wife fell in love with it. And it was like 4 miles from where she works. And you know, yeah. You know what winters are like in the south towns of Buffalo.
But I mean, if you go down Route 5 or down 7, whatever, fucking south of where you're living, I mean, you know, within 5-10 minutes, you're like in country land, aren't you? Like,
I hate the country.
Oh, okay.
I would never live in a country. I would never live in the country. The Bronx is almost too rural for me.
You are a dime. I don't even know how you say that. Like a person of contrasts, I suppose. I know there's a better clichéical way of saying it, but I don't know it. So fuck it. You know what I'm trying to say. The duality of man.
Duality of man.
Fucking for peace is like fighting for virginity or something like that.
Isn't that from Full Metal Jacket?
I think so. And I transposed the words to make it even dumber.
Oh, you know what I watched last night as I was winding down? I was flipping through the channels, and I don't watch much television, but Roadhouse was on. The dumbest movie ever made. It's so dumb. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Who doesn't? It's so dumb that it's brilliant, and it's just,
yeah.
Oh, my God. The words spoken in that movie are just so hilarious. Patrick Swayze carries his own medical records around.
What's funny is he's like 5'5", you know?
Yeah, he was a pretty small guy.
And then, like, his buddy was that old, I can't even think of his name.
But Sam Elliott.
Big Lebowski.
Sam Elliott.
Yeah, him. And they just kick everyone's ass, man. It's fucking crazy.
I was quoting, like, every line last night.
I always wanted to have a knife in my boot, like, after that. That was one of my takeaway from that. Like, that's a good idea. I could stab kick someone.
I was reminded last night, you take the leg out, and you got the fight won. But
can I just wait?
As Patrick Swayze says, nobody ever wins in a fight.
Fucking just.
He also said
amazing words.
He also said pain don't hurt.
I have to. My brother used to say that all the time. We've been watching Cobra Kai, the TV show. Fucking like on the same level. It's so ridiculously stupid. It's awesome. There's like a TV show they made a few years ago. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, I am aware that they made a TV show out of it, which, you know, I think is kind of cool. Like, it stars that William Bobka guy, right? The blonde haired dude who was like the bad kid in every 80s movie.
I just know when we started watching it, Quinn goes, "Dad, that's the guy from Back to School." I'm like, "Screw you, Melon."
Yeah, that's the dude. He was an asshole in every 1980s movie.
Chaz. Yeah. That was his name in Back to School. He's on the swimming team. Couldn't do the triple Lindy.
he's so many countless movies. Glad to see that. Yeah, he seems to have a good sense of humor too about himself in real life.
You have to in real life. I mean, with the shit they did. I mean, trust me, when they look at the checks from the movies, like the annuity checks or whatever they call them, residuals, fuck. But that was one of their catchphrases in that one too, was sweep the leg.
Yeah. I have one of the weirdest things. I went to see the Sabres play the New York Islanders in Brooklyn. Couple years ago, this is when the Islanders were playing in Brooklyn temporarily, and it was Ralph Macchio night for some reason. And they were giving away Ralph Macchio bobbleheads because apparently he's a New York Islander fan. He grew up a New York Islander fan, and it has the bobblehead is Ralph Macchio wearing an Islanders jersey, but he's got the Karate Kid headband on, and he's doing he's doing that pose.
Crane.
Yeah, where you stick your arms out and you kick the guy.
Yeah, I saw someone with a T-shirt that said, "Getting your ass kicked since the '80s when you pull this move." Imagine getting in a bar fight and doing that move.
Yeah.
I saw some video. You know, I get sucked into those reels, and you're the one that told me about them. But on like Instagram,
yeah,
there was one I got sucked into where they show like a big fat biker guy standing in a crowd, and all of a sudden this beer bottle comes flying across the you know, the fucking whatever, nails him in the head.
Oh, so I got to tell you about a reel I just saw this morning, and this is fucking crazy. So there is the people who put these reels together. I'm just they show up on everything. If you go on any social media, I think with the exception of Twitter, it's like you see these reels. So I'm going
gave
through
Elon Musk and his greatest next idea.
Yeah, or else there's I always get stand-up comedy.
Yeah,
but there was this one of a pole vaulter today, and it's an account. It's put together by some like person in the Middle East who apparently is a fucking pervert, because it's just clips of attractive pole vaulters, right? But the person who was featured in the clip today was the daughter of a girl I used to hook up with regularly here in Buffalo.
God.
You know her too. I don't want to say her, but and the only reason I know it was this girl was because her athleticism is pretty well known. She was like a star athlete locally, and someone was just I was at a party the other day, and this woman's coworker was telling me about this woman's amazing daughters, one of which is a track superstar. And I was just like, God, people are perverts, man.
It's been going on forever. I mean, just to prove that point, I don't know where I came across this, but there's like a sculpture in some building. I think I saw it. I don't know, Facebook and some ancient alien group I'm in. But it's a sculpture from the old days, okay? And yeah. In the sculpture, there's a guy fucking a donkey. Like, this is a sculpture from a building, okay? Somewhere. You'd have to ask Giorgio Tsoukalos or whatever his name is. And on the other side of the donkey, on its face side, is a guy beaten off, right? It looks like he's either going to try to put his carrot in the horse's mouth, which is a bad idea, or he's just whacking off to the event. And then there's a person behind the donkey with their face like this, and it's a sculpture. So a lot of time went into making this fucking thing, right? I mean, this is pretty well thought out. So it's not an impulse decision, right? And the catch line on the meme was, you know, the birth of the face plant or face palm. Yeah, whatever. You know, because the person in back's like, oh my God, what are these two assholes doing?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just like,
everything changes.
Especially as the father of a daughter, it kind of like sickens me that there's some creep somewhere who, I mean, this person in the video is doing something that is completely asexual and it's something that she's thrives at made her name doing. And there's some pervert halfway around the globe who somehow has a clip of a track meet and he's sexualizing it. And it's disgusting. And, you know, and
And it's got millions of views on Facebook. Yeah.
I would love to call this person and say like, hey, you know, alert them about this if they don't already know it. But like, I haven't talked to this person in 30 years. So that would be weird, you know?
Yeah. And then they say, oh, and how many times did you watch it, Matt?
Well, you know, what caught my attention was the jersey, because a good friend of mine their daughter just started going to the same college. And so, but I don't know. It's weird. People are fucking gross.
Right. Well, I'm going to skip the intro. We'll just get to our topic today, folks. That was an interesting intro sidebar. We're going to talk about stoicism, one of our favorite topics, at least it is with me and Matt, and a lot of people in general. And it's interesting. I asked my wife, I played not necessarily a trick, but I just wanted to gauge her awareness of it. And, you know, I'm like, when you hear about stoicism or stoic, you know, what are the images that come to your brain initially? And she just said someone that hides their emotions.
Ooh, interesting.
And so I went to, you know, the old Webster. And, you know, that's one of, you know, how they always have multiple definitions. And, but that is kind of, you know, a part, but it's not incomplete. I'll ask you that question. Like, when you were like, how did you first become aware of it, if you can even remember? And how did you understand it to, you know, as a definition or what the real meaning was, if you don't mind?
How did I come about it? Boy, that's a good question. You know, the irony is, I probably came about it through the internet, which is kind of ironic in a way, because, you know, I found it through it's not new anymore, but like I was going to say a new technology. I discovered through a new technology this philosophy that has existed for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I noticed people have been writing about it the last couple of years. Excuse me. And I started delving into it that way. The other irony I find about Stoicism is, and I mentioned that I noticed more and more people writing about it. Stoicism has kind of taken on this trendiness in the last couple of years, which, you know, was interesting that I think to myself, like, it's so funny that something that started centuries ago is all of a sudden a bit trendy.
Yeah, nothing's new, right? I mean, we hear that, we joke about it. it's all around us. You know, I wrote manuscript, right? And I had this publishing company take a look at it. And, you know, I got some pretty good feedback. It was fairly generic. But one of the things the person said to me was, you know, cut back. You need to cut back on the cliches. And it stuck in my head because I'm like, as I read through it again, I'm like, yeah, I use them a lot. But then I, you know, of course, then you walk around and like, it seems like that's all we do is walk around like parrots quoting cliches to each other like all day.
Well, you know, as a writer, you're that gets pounded into your head that, you know, good writing is free of cliches. So I'm always kind of
is that cliche itself.
Well, no. Yeah, I mean, yeah, actually, that's a good point. But I'm always kind of cognizant of cliches. So, but, you know, I was doing some reading on the revival of Stoicism, like why that occurred. And, you know, there's a belief that the interest in Stoicism especially took off during the pandemic pause.
People had time to think.
Yeah.
Running around like chickens with their heads cut off all day.
Well, right. I mean, how would you define Stoicism? Like, why would the pandemic pause trigger?
No, I could break it down. If I were going to take a quick swag at that, it's because a lot of what we do is run by our limbic system, or they call it the lizard brain or amygdala. You know, pick your own poison there. I'm no doctor. But, you know, the limbic system is responsible for our fight or flight, you know, survival instinct. And a lot, you know, emotions are powerful. We'll never, like, you know, be able to keep them controlled. They're like the animal in the cage that you try to keep in. And part of that is Stoicism, like being a master of your emotions. But at the end of the day, you're never going to fucking do that, right? If me and you had to get up in front of the millions of listeners we have right now on a stage, let's say there was 200 people in a room and we had to get up there and start talking to them like we're doing right now, I'd be fucking terrified. You know, my face would turn red. My heart would start beating. I'd probably start sweating, you know, and I'd be nervous. And then, you know, I would hopefully try to master that, but I can't control that. That's going to happen to me. You know, yeah. So I'm just using that as an example, right? And so, like, when I asked my wife, I go, well, how would you describe Stoicism if Claire asked you? That's my, you know, soon-to-be 9-year-old daughter. And she's like, oh, well, keeping a stiff upper lip, which bring us back to, I'm like, well, don't use a cliche. Explain it to her. Because now you got to explain what the fucking cliche means.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's, I think keeping a stiff upper lip is a good way to explain about 50% of Stoicism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, also worked into Stoicism is, you know, it's supposed to be a mechanism or a philosophy that helps you deal with trying times,
yep,
or difficulties in life or horrible events. Yep. And the reason why you need to, or the reason why you keep a stiff upper lip is because the only thing, according to the Stoics, that really matters is, you know, your excellence of character or your virtue, and, you know, and pursuing, you know, virtue is really all that really matters in life, and having human connections. And, you know, one of the things they say about Stoicism is, you know, when you read about it, it talks a lot about how your status in life, if you're a wealthy man or you're a peasant, neither matters. All that really matters is that human connection, and that people are good people, and your virtue again is what truly matters, and everything else is white noise.
Yeah, something about, I mean, I'll put it this way. Like, I always was aware of it. I had a general understanding of it, probably like most people, right? And I always thought it meant to be like the strong, silent type, You know, you do the right thing, you take care of people, and you keep your fucking mouth shut, and you don't act like a crybaby, right? That's like the tough guy in us. But I like, you know, I lost a job after 17, 18 years of being a, what I would call a way above average employee and a contributor. And when I got laid off, you know, a bunch of people before me had gotten laid off, you know. As they say, the graveyard is filled with indispensable people. And, you know, so I knew it could always happen. But when it did, it really hit me harder than I thought it, you know, than I will. I thought I would have been able to handle it better than I did. And I was thrown for a loop. Like, I was fucking pissed. I felt, you know, betrayed. I just felt a lot of things. And I remember coming across something, you know, stoic. It was the story of Zeno, who's like the supposedly the father of stoicism. And like, he was some rich guy sailing his boat. He was a merchant or something. His boat crashed and, you know, he didn't die, but he ended up in a library reading about, or a bookstore reading about Socrates, who'd already come before him. And that supposedly was the birth of modern Stoicism, because it used to be called Zenoism. And, you know, he would make the joke, like, if I didn't fuck my life up, I never would have started this other thing. And I thought, well, this is, you know, I took that as kind of allegorical, from the sense of, yeah, my life is chained, so... You know, I didn't do it. Wasn't necessarily my fault. I mean, when my boss laid me off, he like shook my hand and just said, you know, this isn't it's not personal. It's just business. And it wasn't your performance. You know, they whacked 10,000 people that day. So I was amongst good company. And but the point was, you know, I wasn't looking at the opportunity in front of me like saying I'm free of this stupid job. I mean, I didn't like the job. I got paid a lot to do a job I really didn't care about, which is the reality. Right. But at the time, I was, my ego stood in the way, my fucking childishness, whatever. And had I not taken the opportunity to try to kind of I don't want to say reinvent myself, because I don't really like that term, but instead of staying static, which I was, I had the opportunity to change myself and be something I always wanted to be, which led me on a different journey. It was become better, but you know, I had a fucking, you have to embrace the suck, as we say nowadays, right?
Yeah, one of the most well-known Stoics is a philosopher named Seneca, and he says that disaster is virtue's opportunity. But it's important though to distinguish, is Stoicism does Stoicism tell you to bury your emotions, or does Stoicism tell you to, you know, approach hard times with a sense of control and, you know, find a way to soldier on? Because I don't think any philosophy that preaches bury your emotions is a good philosophy. And so, I mean, I think it's, I'm going to say dangerous, and that's a stupid word because it's a little bit too dramatic, but you know, I don't think people should interpret Stoicism as a philosophy that tells you to bury your emotions.
No, I'm looking at a website, cause I didn't memorize all this stuff. And it's interesting because the first part is accepting, you know, they have a phrase, amor fati. I don't know how to say it. But it's not just accept your fate, accept whatever fate comes your way and embrace it and go, yeah, this is what I fucking got. I'm dealing with it. So it's like you accept what's happened. You know, I see those guys in the commercials for Wounded Warriors, you know. And I mean, some of those guys, they are fucked up, man. No legs, no arms, their faces are burned, whatever's wrong with them. And, you know, so a lot of those guys don't make it. A lot of those guys, you know, take themselves out, have a horrible existence, and then some of them accept it and try to do something with their lives. And, you know, then I look at me and, you know, I'm like, fuck, I don't even have 1/10 of the struggles these guys have, but I still have my struggles and they're real to me, you know? So there's acceptance and then doing something about it, I guess. What? Go ahead.
Well, I'm glad that you added at the end of that last sentence that your struggles were real to you, because, you know, I often hear people say when they're talking about someone else's troubles, they're like, well, you know, those aren't really troubles. Look at this guy. He's dealing with problems 10 times more severe than yours, you know? And I understand when people say that, but that doesn't make people's problems any less real.
I'm going to throw this quote at you because you brought up Seneca, so it's your fault. But he wrote, we suffer more in imagination than we do in reality. And that includes everybody, because you can't, you know, we all live in our own personal hell inside of our heads. That's true. We see that. We see rich people all the time that are kill themselves, do drugs, fuck their lives up, lose a fortune. You know, we see it all the time. And then we laugh at them, or we go, oh, why are they sad? They're fucking rich.
But see, that kind of goes back to the Stoic philosophy, is that, you know, your status in life doesn't matter. What matters is your virtue and how you approach and handle hard times. And
well, Carl Jung, who's a great psychiatrist of the day, you know, all that stuff is like built on other stuff. Whether it's religion, whether it's stoicism or modern day psychiatry, you know, all that stuff is just evolved. You know, you read Nietzsche, you hear psychiatry. It all just builds off each other. One of the things that drew me to stoicism was that it seems free of religion, because I view religion with kind of a negative pair of glasses. But I, you know, at the same time, there's a lot of good things foundationally that religion can teach you about life. So you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, Mr. Cliche.
but Nietzsche was very critical. He did not like the Stoics. He felt that Stoics imposed their morality on nature.
Well, that's the judgy part. So thank you. You're bringing me back to my main point.
I love, by the way. I actually love when philosophers like hate each other.
Well, they're usually Freud and Carl Jung hated each other, and Carl Jung was his student or something like that. No, but he has a famous quote that people always throw up on memes and billboards. It says, thinking is hard. That's why people judge. So instead of putting yourself in someone else's, it's easy to judge. It's just like using a cliche. I mean, in another realm. Like I see someone broken down on the side of the road. I'm like, whoa, they probably didn't do regular service on their car. They deserved it.
Yeah,
I never think that.
I think that's my biggest fault, is judging. I need to stop. I need to be less judgmental. But you know, it's funny. I struggle. Not as badly as a lot of people, but I struggle with depression. And I noticed when I was going back to read about Stoicism in preparation for this show, that a lot of these, for lack of a better term, self-help books nowadays, which I don't really read, I've read a couple recently. And one of the ones I read recently was Unfuck Yourself. And really the message in Unfuck Yourself was, you know, what you think is what you become.
Yep.
So at the time I read it, I really didn't realize that that's really the whole book was. And it didn't present itself as a book about stoicism, or, you know, a book coming from a Stoic. It was really coming more from a psychiatrist, I guess. But that whole philosophy that you become what you think, that's basically Stoicism.
Yeah, well, Stoicism, again, you know, it's been around. You know what's really funny? I just learned, like, I said something, again, to my wife, who knows a lot of stuff. And I said, well, why did the Greeks speak Latin? Like, what the fuck was wrong with them? Didn't they? Why isn't everything in Greek? And she's like, you're so stupid. The Romans invented Latin. I'm like, no, they didn't. I go, they invented Roman numerals. Like, you know, and I have like that idiot quality about me. But so then I had to like research it because I'm like, you know, well, what is Latin versus Greek, and why are all the Greek gods then? Like, I thought they were like the oldest, and then you have to go back and figure out that the Romans were. But I don't even understand half of it because I'm like, well, the Greek gods all became Roman gods, so it sounded like the Romans came after the Greeks. And anyone listening is probably going to think I'm a moron right now, and that's okay because you're just judging me.
Oh, it's funny. Two of the best known Stoics, one is Epictetus, who was a slave,
right?
And the other is Marcus Aurelius, who was a Roman emperor. So, you know, you have a slave, and then you have this ruler, aristocrat. You could say, and at least in lifestyle, and you know, Stoicism.
But he hated being in charge, right?
Right. He used to remind himself every single day that he was going to deal with assholes. So, you know, in a way, I guess I kind of adopt Marcus Aurelius's daily mantra that, you know, he would remind himself he was going to deal with assholes and difficult people, and, you know, and he was going to have to soldier on, so to speak. But I bring up the fact that, you know, two of the best known Stoics, one was an emperor and one was a slave, because it's a philosophy that, you know, anyone, regardless of their status, you know, can use and have used.
Agreed. I actually think it should be taught in school, like, as part of the curriculum, because you think about it, and you worked with teachers, so you're probably a lot more closer to this than I am, but I have children that are students, and I went through school and college, and you know, most of the shit you learn in high school and stuff, you're like, oh, I'll never use this in real life. I'll never use Pythagorean's theorem.
Oh my God, yeah.
But like, you know, they don't teach personal finance to kids. And like you got to scratch your head and go, you know, like, I went to Catholic school my whole life, and I loved the fact that religion was a course that went into your average, because it definitely, I used to get 100 in religion all the time.
Yeah.
So it pulled my grades up, because it was easy. But I mean, I could have easily replaced that with Stoicism and probably been better off, is my opinion, looking back on it with hindsight, which is 2020, you know.
Boy, that's a cliche. You know, it's funny. I went to a Catholic college. So part of the curriculum in order to graduate was you needed at least 9 credits of religion. But the religion classes you took, it wasn't like studying the Bible and things like that. You know, a lot of it was, you know, if you look at some of the courses I took, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I realize it in retrospect, a lot of the religion courses I took were, in a way, philosophy courses.
Right.
And I also had to take 9 credits of philosophy. And, you know, at the time I was in school, I don't think my mind was developed to wrap my head around philosophy, but I got more out of those religion courses, like, you know, studying Siddhartha and things like that, you know, people like that. And, then I did the philosophy. So, I mean, you know, there is a lot of philosophy rooted in religion, and that might, some people might take offense to that. I don't know, but, It's one way to look at it, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just remember reading somebody wrote, like, God has actually been created in man's image, not the other way around. It makes better sense when you change the point of view. And, you know, and then Nietzsche said it, right, when he talked about the Superman or the Ubermensch. He said something along the lines of, man is walking a bridge between beast and the Superman. And that's our idea of God, because we have the capacity to always be good, but often we don't choose that path for whatever reason.
Remember when George W. Bush was asked who his favorite philosopher was, and he said Jesus Christ, and he took like a lot of shit for that. I got to tell you, I don't think that was necessarily a bad answer. I don't think that was a stupid answer. Because you can, again, this goes back to the religion courses being interpreted on some level as philosophy. I mean, I don't know. I think they were looking for some deep, you know.
I don't think it's bad at all. Like,
I didn't think it was a bad answer.
I mean, there are people who say Jesus is an idea, too, and he's not real. And
Jesus is a real person.
I mean, well, here, all I'm going to say to you, and I might agree with you, but I wasn't there, right? That's like when people get in quotes fights, I always love those. No, Henry Thoreau said this, and like, no, that was Emerson, you asshole. No, that was the other guy. It's like, were you there to hear him say it, you fucking person? Like, well, I read it in this book. I'm like, okay, good for you. You know, I saw it in a meme.
Right, but whether you believe Jesus was the Messiah, that's a whole different issue.
Here's where you know where they get you on this one. They say there's not too many Christians walk around today that actually lived like Jesus, because Jesus was a hobo.
Yeah, I mean,
walked
right
around the desert. I mean, come on.
He was
Henry David Thoreau probably lived more like Jesus than most people today, because he had his little shed out in the woods.
Right. Like the Unabomber.
You know, I read a story about him that, like, the whole reason he even got into that was because there was, like, some kind of, like, mining thing. They'd given the land to some company that was, like, encroaching on his little nature preserve. Yeah. That's what sent him off the deep end.
I got to know the Unabomber's brother pretty well. Because,
did you really?
Yeah.
The one that gave him up?
When I was a reporter at the state capitol covering state government.
Yeah, we're going to use this as a topic, man. Been holding out on me.
His brother, who gave him up, interestingly, then became a opponent of the death penalty, and he was motivated by his brother's situation. And New York had reinstated the death penalty for a brief window of time during the Pataki administration. I covered Pataki. So David Kaczynski, the Unabomber's brother, was a constant presence at the Capitol lobby.
Real question to you.
Capitol.
Did you have more of the point? I didn't want to interrupt you.
Go ahead. No.
I read somewhere, or maybe I saw it on a television program, that he was dosed with that MK Ultra. He was part of that he was dosed with LSD when he was like a young grad student or something.
Yeah, I read about that too.
Well, is that even true?
I don't know. When they showed that famous Unabomber photo after he was in custody, mm-hmm. he looked a lot of like my ex-girlfriend's father.
Is that where he's like the first guy to really bring back the hoodie. I think he pioneered that look that kids adopted today. I have another question for you that's a little off topic, but it's never too far off topic. People keep saying this phrase, and I feel like punching people when I hear it now.
Right.
You do you.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's a new way of saying fuck you to people without saying fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I've taken notice of that statement and the use of that phrase over the last year. And you're right. It does seem to be
the passive aggressive way of saying, hey, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I think it is. Okay. I think it is.
Validation.
Here's the twist, though. Going back to Stoicism, here's the twist in today's podcast for me. I don't consider myself a Stoic.
Oh, why not?
Because I'm completely ruled by my emotions, which is ironic in a sense, because if there was a philosophy that I lean toward, it would be absurdism, which, you know, basically talks about how, you know, life is just, we live in a chaotic world, and life really has no meaning. But regardless, you should accept the fact that it has no meaning, and you should kind of rebel against that and just embrace what life has to offer.
Yeah.
And that's a philosophy I really believe in. Unfortunately, if I'm being honest, while I want to be, and I agree with the philosophy of absurdism, and I want to be an absurdist, I think if I'm being honest with myself and I look at the way I live my life or my attitude, I think I'm more of a nihilist or a nihilist, however you want to pronounce it, which, you know, basically is the hardcore version of absurdism that says, you know, life has no intrinsic meaning and it's pointless to try to construct your own meaning out of it. So, you know, Nietzsche was a nihilist. So,
well, what's oddly appropriate is I just took a trip to Barcelona, Spain. Okay. And on this trip, they showed a movie. Well, I had a TV. I could watch a bunch of different crap. But I chose to watch on the flight there the entire movie, which I'd never seen beginning to end, The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
I've never watched the whole show end to end. And watching it, I think I watched it when I was like a young guy when it first came out. And I was like, it's dumb. It's kind of funny. Whatever. But I have such a, like, a renewed appreciation for that film and the nihilists, you know, especially Flea. Yeah. And the German guy who's like, I can't even think of his name, but he's, you know, I don't know. The whole thing just ties together now with being like, I could not say I'm a nihilist. Right. But I told my mother one time, because again, there's what you think in your head, and we're always evolving, right? When I say we're not static, I just mean you're not a monolith. You're not a piece of lead that just sits there. You're constantly changing. Your thoughts change. Your opinions change. You're not the same guy you were yesterday, whether, you know, and you probably don't like hearing shit like that. But when you just said, I don't think I'm stoic, I kind of had an internal chuckle. Because of all my friends growing up, I would have called you. If someone asked me to describe my good pal, Matt Smith, I'd be like, he's very stoic. Like, I would use those words to describe you.
Maybe I am, and I don't know it, you know? Like, nihilism has a very negative and pessimistic connotation to it. At least that's what
I... Yeah, but isn't it one click away from being hedonistic, which I definitely like?
What's that?
I mean, to me, it's like being a click away from hedonistic. Which is just a seeker of pleasure.
Oh, I guess. Right? Well, I guess in a way, yeah. I mean, I guess that's true. But I'm definitely not a hedonist.
But I mean, for me, if I don't have to worry about God smiting me when I'm dead, then I'm probably gonna go out and want to have sex. Just like you think about the rules that constrain us, right? And I'm saying that a little tongue in cheek, but you know, like there's a certain relief of like, you know, relieving us of our fears and our worries, which again, if we're right, listening to the Stoics, 99% of that exists in our fucking minds anyway. It's not in the real world.
But I mean, just what appeals to me so much about absurdism is, you know, if life has no intrinsic meaning, I love that it suggests that you just embrace what life has to offer. I want to do that. Like, that's what appeals to me, but I don't do that. I'm really shitty at that. I am, you know, if you go back to Stoicism it says that you become what you think. They basically say that as like a warning, like, you know, they're basically saying you become what you think. So let go of the shit that doesn't matter.
Right. And you have trouble letting go.
This is where I fail. I don't necessarily do it externally in a sense that I act out, but internally, my mind, I often don't let shit go. So I actually, my emotions or my thoughts are the driving factor in who I am.
Right.
And it's never a good thing, you know, because people who know me really well know that I'm completely controlled by my emotions and thoughts, and it works against me. Because those emotions and thoughts are never happy emotions and thoughts, you know.
You ever hear this one? If you're angry, it's because you're living in the past. If you're fearful, it's because you're living in the future. And wow. If you're happy, you're probably living in the present.
Yes. So, okay. I never heard that. And I find a lot of value in what you just said. And I suck at living in the present.
Yeah, I had that independent idea. I lived in California a while back, and I decided I was going to teach myself how to snowboard, which was dumb. Should have taken a lesson, but because I'm dumb, I went up to the mountain, taught myself how to snowboard. But the point I'm making is, when I was trying to get down the hill, I was trying not to die and hit trees and all the other shit that can happen to you when you're trying to snowboard. And I thought how much fun, why do I like doing this so much? I suck at it. And I'm like, because I can't think about anything else other than getting my ass down that hill and trying to make turns and not fall. And the minute my mind wanders to like Jerry's daydreaming selection, which I love to daydream, I'll fucking wipe out and hurt myself. So my point is, it kind of forced me to live in the moment. Yeah. And I'm like, so I could just build on that. Like, you know, like if I'm in a meeting and it's boring, I'm daydreaming about meeting Matt Smith for drinks later and how much fun we're going to have. Yeah. And how I'm going to make fun of some asshole in the meeting who keeps using catchphrases and shit like that. And think about how often, because we're daydreamers, right? I mean, I am. I daydream constantly, you know. And Edgar Allan Poe said something like, I pity the people that only dream at night. It's like the people that are really living are the ones that dream during the day. And I'm like, yeah, that's me.
You know, it's funny. I going to your snowboard analogy, it makes me think again about what I was just talking about with myself, how I'm, you know, ruled by emotions and thoughts. And I think maybe in a way, I'm a complete contradiction. So, as you said earlier in the podcast, the duality of man, even though I'm someone I'm the definition of, you are what you think. Maybe I do have some stoicism in me because, I do roll with shit. I don't let my emotions, even though they kind of rule me, I don't let them stop me, because I'm going to toot my own horn here, but I'm like the most motivated person I know. I am constantly doing shit. One of my problems is I can't focus. I'm interested and involved in so much. And I'm like you with the snowboarding, you know, like I'm going to teach myself how to do this. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I don't really watch TV or do much of anything in terms of, you know, listening to programs and this, because I'm constantly, I just fear that if I devote those hours to listening to a podcast or watching a television program, it's taken away from my ability to get shit done.
Mm-hmm.
So like I have a bunch of photo shoots today because I'm working on a project, and it's a project that I'm not really good at, but I'm challenging myself to take it on, and with the goal of getting this work in a gallery somewhere here.
Cool.
And I don't even know what I'm doing, but
that's the best.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to, as you say, get down that fucking mountain. So
well, I wrote a story that I'm trying to have you.
That part of me is stoicism, that, you know, I roll.
I think so, because part of it too, you are not materialistic. Of all the people, I know all kinds of people, right, up and down the spectrum. You're probably on a short list of people I know who absolutely don't give a fuck about material things. And I don't mean you don't spend money on shit that you put value to. I know you told me a story about buying an expensive camera or a lens or something, and you felt a little guilty about it. At the same time, you're going on a photo shoot today because you're taking pictures, so you need good equipment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you put value on the thing. Yeah, I drive a pickup truck, and I use it for shit all the time. And, you know, my son was like, why don't you buy a cooler car? And I'm like, because there's a lot of utility I get out of this fucking beast, and I like driving it. But, you know, I don't mind spending money on something if there's value in it. And I see you like that.
Well, yeah. What I put value in is creating things. So if I'm going to spend money on something that helps me create, you know, it's to me, I value the creation, but I'll spend money on whatever tool helps me create.
Well, you know what I read this morning, buddy?
Or utilize.
You're going to like this. I read this just this morning that children are fucking insanely creative, and that parents and teachers destroy that and turn us into working robots.
I've seen that before, and I would tend to agree with that.
Totally agree with it.
Yeah. All right, let's bring this home.
That's why you should always stay
man.
A child. That part I'm pretty good on.
What's the golden rule today? Let's bring this home.
I mean, well, you got to skate to where the puck's going to be.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Man, I like that.
Yeah, you know, modern day, everyone loves the great Gretzky.
You got to use your mind.
And then look at my friend, the Skull. We'll close on this. I mean, we could leave this life. I mean, I could leave this my house right now and get hit by a fucking car. You know, you could leave this life right now. So
I don't want to leave this life alone, but I got to be honest with you. The way things are going, I'm ready for the asteroid. I think we should all leave together.
Ah. Block that out. You know, I was reading something from Nietzsche where he talked about war and the impending doom and gloom of war, world war, you know, probably a lot harder to murder people in the masses back then, but starving them out always seemed to be an effective way back in the day. That'll probably be how most of us go.
Speaking of going,
I'm starving right now.
I got to get out of my house because there's a 5K taking place in front of my fucking house. It never fucking ends, this neighborhood. And there's a 5K starting at 9:30. And if I don't get the fuck out of this house, I'm going to be trapped in it until 11:30. And I got shit to do.
Well, next time I come to Buffalo, I'm just going to come to your house. So
go Bills.
You've been warned.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
You got to give me a heads up because I got a dog that is absolutely ferocious, and she
will
kill you.
Your fucking dog.
Yeah. All right, bro. All right.
Later.
Stay free.